Breaking news right now from the Supreme Court on the abortion pill case. Let's go right to NBC's Yamiche Alcindor, who is outside the court. Yamiche, this decision just dropped. I know you have to have a moment to look through it to really get into the details, but what do we know right now?
What we know right now is that the Supreme Court has dismissed this misoprostol case, meaning that this access to this abortion pill as we have it right now remains standing. It's a unanimous decision, which of course is this is in some ways noteworthy because this is a 6-3 majority conservative court. But they're saying that the doctors who brought this lawsuit against the FDA challenging access to the abortion pill, that they lack standing. So this is really punting it, saying that this will continue to have access. So if you're a woman who's wondering whether or not you will have access to this abortion pill, for now, misoprostol continues to be accessible through telehealth, through mail. This is a big, big decision. Of course, the Supreme Court just 2 years ago overturned Roe v. Wade. This is another big decision from the Supreme Court regarding abortion. We should note that the majority of abortions in this country, something like 63%, happen through a medication abortion. So this pill means that a number of women are going to still have access to that medication.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And today we're talking about why in the world that the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that mifepristone, the French abortion pill that you can get online, that results in 63% of the abortions right now. How in the world could they fail to rule on that? We'll talk about that today. We'll talk about the implications of the French abortion pill, what's happening, the health effects, why the justices decided what they did. And so we'll have that discussion in just a minute. Well, you know, it's been 2 years since Roe was overturned, Roe versus Wade. And of course, since the inception of Roe versus Wade, over 65 million babies have fallen, with thousands more taken every day. Preborn honors those precious babies who never had a chance to take their first breath. Who would they have become? Every one of them was special. Every birth is special. Every human life is unique and special. We have lost a generation. I read one place where we have destroyed enough babies to fill the entire country of Canada. We've eliminated the virtual correlation of the population of Canada through abortion. It's unbelievable. Now it's easier. And the left is so happy. And the Supreme Court just decided to hand them a ruling that helps it to continue. I don't understand, but we're going to talk about it today. If you want to stop abortion right now, the best way is to talk to the moms, for heaven's sake, for their sake. You'll understand, certainly after this discussion today, how awful the French abortion pill is for women who get it at home and take this pill privately. We'll talk about that. This is a plea from me, really personally, to listen. Please don't do this. And that's what preborn does. They talk to the moms and reason with them. They show them pictures of their babies in the womb. And then most of them, over 50% of them, decide to choose their baby's life and their life too, really, truth be told. If you'd like to help Preborn, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, today's show is very important, so I hope you'll, you know, get out a piece of paper and get your Kleenex out. This is a serious thing. Life is at stake, and lives are being lost, and we have to do something about it if we can. We're going to talk about that today with Father Frank Pavone on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
There was a larger global issue here about FDA authority, right? The original case was disputing the FDA's authority to approve mifepristone 20-some-odd years ago. Medication abortion is safe. It's been legal for over 20 years. It is safer than Tylenol. So those are sort of the fundamentals of the case. But now what we're looking at is, how does this affect abortion bans? We always thought this case, by we abortion rights advocates, was a way to implement a backdoor abortion ban. ban to restrict abortion access in states that have made abortion legal, including states that have constitutional protections in their states for abortion. What this decision does today is it clears the path. It clears the path for states to ramp up access to abortion, medication abortion, like California has done, really opening up medication abortion access to folks from other states. It clears a lot of uncertainty for practitioners and providers in states without abortion bans, but it also makes it easier for folks in states with abortion bans to travel and access abortion care through telemedicine, through brick and mortar pharmacies. It makes sure medication abortion is accessible and legal in all 50 states. It also is a big win for the Biden administration and the FDA. It solidifies their authority, and it shows that they're willing to use all the tools in the toolbox to fight back against these bans.
All right, report from MSNBC about the Supreme Court's decision, 9-0, to allow mifepristone to be administered to women through telehealth, through whatever manner, because they did not decide. And we'll talk about that with our next guest. I have to say, I never saw this coming. 20 years ago, when the French abortion pill was first introduced, and the FDA was fighting, we were trying to keep them from being able to approve it for American use. I never saw this coming. I never saw this coming, where we'd be at a place where 63% of abortions in America are women receiving this pill through the mail or by a doctor, taking it and aborting their children at home. It's jaw-dropping, and yet that's where we are. Well, someone who I know has been in this fight with me, doing his work to try to stop this. He's dedicated his life to it. It's Father Frank Pavone. Father, of course, is one of the most prominent pro-life leaders in the world. He's been a Catholic priest since 1988, and of course, he's not officially a priest now because the Vatican came after him. That's the last time I talked to Father Frank, because he's so adamant on abortion, and things have changed by this current pope. They have changed a lot, right? They have really changed, and Father Frank has not changed. He still directs Priests for Life. He's still greatly admired, and he is really on the front lines now of this issue still, and he joins us this morning. Father Frank, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Sandy. It's great to be with you, and as you've said, we've been in the trenches together for decades, so it's always good to talk to you.
Yeah, really. I know this is kind of an obvious question, but are you as stunned as you stop and think about what I just said? Are you as stunned as I am? When this first came out, in 2000, I thought this will never go. A drug that kills the baby and then a second pill that expels it. This is so brutal, and you do it at home. This will never go, and here we are.
Right, and here we are. It is astonishing, and, you know, a few things to point out. You know, first of all, I mean, you listen to the other side talking about it as you played that clip from MSNBC. And again, they always talk about it as if the only person implicated is the mother, the woman. And of course, we have a lot to say about how this impacts her negatively. It harms the women. But before we even get to that, it's like the baby's not even on their radar screen. You know, oh, it was safer than a Tylenol. Safer for whom? A life is ended. A baby is literally starved to death and then thrown out in the waste or down the toilet talk about the barbarity. Now there's so many different angles to consider here, but yes, the baby is starved. That's how this drug works. It blocks the progesterone that's enabling the baby to be nourished. But you know, Sandy, going all the way back even to the mid 90s, so going back a full 30 years, we saw and this was under the Clinton administration. By the way, this drug, this chemical way of killing babies, has only been advanced under Democrat presidential administrations, we should note. Started under Clinton, mid-90s, then it got approved in 2000, as you mentioned. Then under Obama, safety regulations that were in place got relaxed. And then it was under Biden just in these recent years that they got relaxed even more, and they're practically now down to nothing. You know, you notice what they said in that clip just now. We want to ramp up access. This was clear right from the beginning, right from the mid-90s when we started battling against this. The FDA was cutting corners. The FDA was rushing things. And we pointed that out right away. We said, these people are just, they're so fanatical about having more and more abortion, more and more easily, that they're not adequately taking into account the safety risks, the health risks, the damage this does to the very women that they are claiming to help, claiming to serve, claiming to care about, but their actions tell a different story. And since then, that's all they've done, is taken away more and more safety regulations for the health and well-being and lives of these women.
One thing I want to mention about you also is that you are the National Pastoral Director of Silent No More, and that's where the women come to the Capitol every year at the march and tell their stories about their abortions, and the Rachel's Vineyard, and that's women who've been affected terribly by abortion. Can I say something about that before? Because I wanted to make a point, but I'll make my point. Father Frank, I think the thing we've known for years, through my work and certainly for we were partners, even though we were working in separate ministries, the damage to women of abortion in general is just unspeakable. Now, some are untouched, at least they claim to be, but most are not. And we think we'll just zero in on the emotional, the depression, the regret. Is exponential, and you can speak to that. But I want to just say, on this French abortion pill, I can't imagine what women go through when they get a pill in the mail, and they take it and start having contractions, and go to their bathrooms, and expel a live human being, their baby. I can't imagine the emotional damage. And do we have anything to show that? Are there testimonies about that yet, Father Frank?
Yes, I'm glad you bring up Rachel's Vineyard and Silent No More. If people go to abortiontestimonies.com, they will be able to see and watch and read these testimonies. Abortiontestimonies.com. These are the men and women of our Silent No More campaign, and so many of them have had chemical abortions, and they talk about the pain. You know, one of the things people need to realize is this. This is very selfish on the part of the abortion industry to make abortion like totally now without the involvement of the doctor, because one of the safety regulations that's been thrown away by the Obama administration and the Biden administration is a doctor visit. It's like, okay, you're just going to send these pills in the mail. Doesn't even have to be a doctor anymore who prescribes them. Anybody think that's a good idea? You know, but how do you know it's not an ectopic pregnancy? I mean, this could be life-threatening. She thinks she's expelling a pregnancy from her womb, and meanwhile, it's an ectopic pregnancy. Unless a doctor examines her, how do you know exactly how far along the baby is? Because the further the pregnancy goes along, the less safe these drugs are to use. And yet, you know, you send them in the mail. How do you know she's going to take them at the right time? You know, there used to be the requirement that, again, you had several doctor visits, including a follow-up visit. I mean, since when do we, like, what other kind of medical intervention, like, oh, there's no follow-up, you know? People surgery, don't they go for follow-up appointments and, you know, all the rest?
I think of other generations, you know, because we see movies and read books, where babies were birthed at home. And I know it's not that far, but I'm thinking of earlier than this happened, probably in the 30s and 40s, and maybe still happens. But I'm talking about in more primitive times where there weren't hospitals and doctors. But they always had, like, a midwife. They had someone helping them.
Yes.
These women are alone. They're alone.
And, well, you know, now, Sandy, you mentioned, here's an interesting observation. Many people are not going to think about this when it comes to chemical abortion. Number one, that we know that by surgical abortion, the staff of the abortion clinics are traumatized. I mean, they admit it. They admit it in the medical textbooks that talk about how abortions are done. They're traumatized because they see faces, heads, arms, legs, body parts coming out of that mother, and they have to rearrange them on the tray, and they have to throw them out. Okay, now, the reason they're going to pushing chemical abortion, besides the fact that a lot of doctors don't want to do the surgical abortions, is that the staff don't want to see the results. So they put it in a form where the only person who sees the results of that abortion is that mom alone in her bathroom. And literally, you see the testimonies, again, abortiontestimonies.com. I saw the face of my baby staring at me from the toilet bowl. I mean, what kind of it? Who allows this to happen? And now You know, we know from ministering to those that have had abortions that the abortion clinic becomes a place of great trauma. You know, they'll literally change their driving route to work to avoid going by that place. It has such traumatic impact. And yet now they've turned their home into the abortion clinic. How do you get away from that?
Oh, you can't. Right?
I mean, the
you
pain, and what's happening, Sandy, is they're coming to us quicker. You know, with the rise of chemical abortions, the time between when they have their abortion and when they feel like they're ready for some therapy or for some healing retreats to get over the grief, that time span is getting shorter. And the reason is very simple, because if you didn't see the face, the arms, the legs of that baby that these drugs expelled from your body, you can keep telling yourself the lie, which the other side keeps reinforcing, that this wasn't really a baby. But when you see those arms and legs and faces come out of you in your own bathroom, the denial is broken right from step one. And so now they're coming to us more quickly. They're coming to us more deeply traumatized. And meanwhile, I talked about selfishness before. Those doctors, nurses, and practitioners at the abortion clinic, they're scot-free. They didn't see anything. All they had to do was send a pill in the mail. And it's like, this is reminiscent of when, in the Holocaust, they changed the method of killing from the shooting to the gas chambers, because in the gas chambers, again, the ones doing the killing, all they had to do was press some buttons. They didn't have to see the agony on the faces of their victims. There is a striking parallel here to what's going on, and it just speaks to the barbarity of the abortion industry.
You touched on this, but we need to kind of zero in on it. They say, the FDA says now you can do this as late as 10 weeks. But we know that there's no doctor involved, doesn't have to be, doesn't have to be a doctor that gives them the pill. It can be, I don't know, a pharmacist, whoever approves them, a physician's assistant. How in the world can we be sure? I know the answer is we can't. But that women are only doing this, only using these pills as late as 10 weeks. How about 11? How about 12? How about 3 months? Really? Really? How do we know they're even restricting themselves to 10 weeks?
It's outrageous, isn't it? And not only that, but look what they've done. They've eliminated the requirement to come in person, all right? Secondly, they've eliminated the requirement for a follow-up visit. And thirdly, they've even eliminated, and you know, I mean, what in the world is the explanation for this? Any kind of reporting subsequently of after effects, reporting by anybody, by the state or the medical professionals or anybody, or even how would they even know? But if she went back to the hospital because there was some complication later, complications from these drugs, they've weakened the reporting requirement. So it's like, what are they trying to do? It's a cult of death. It's they talk about it in terms of, we ought to provide access for women to abortion. Yeah, look at it from the other side of the coin. They're doing more business. They're getting more money, and it becomes easier and easier for the abortionist, harder and harder for the woman.
I want to play a clip from MSNBC, which kind of lays out what is actually legal now. Gleefully, they lay this out. This is clip 5.
Right now, this means nothing changes when it comes to this abortion pill access. That means all of the things that they were looking at that had been approved in later years following the original approval in 2000, like the ability to get this medication through the mail, like only having to do one doctor visit instead of three, like being able to access medication up to 10 weeks in gestation versus just 7. All of those things remain.
Yeah, so aren't we happy? You know, they keep saying this is safe, but Father Frank, you and I both know it isn't. I'll just give one stat that I know about. The FDA, in their own label, admits that 1 in 25 women will visit the emergency room after using this drug. 1 in 25, and that's
right.
Their numbers. Do you know anything about any of the? Yeah. I don't know if we have any updated numbers. I mean, more reliable, I don't know. But we know it does damage. It's a lie that it doesn't hurt anyone. And also, Father Frank, you may not know this, but I remember that this, I think it was mifepristone. I can't remember the name of the other drug. But one of them was, this is an off-label use. In other words, the drug has been, yes, prescribed for other things for a very long time. And when they say it's harmless, like Tylenol, I guess I found myself wondering, yes, maybe when it's used for what the label use is, but this is an off-label use that kills a human being. I don't know if you know anything about that, but that's...
Yeah. The other drug is misoprostol, or Cytotec, as it's sometimes called. So the first drug starves the baby, as we were talking about earlier, by blocking the working of the progesterone. The second drug induces the contractions to get the baby out of the woman's body. So those are the two parts of the process. And this goes on for hours and hours. It could even go on for days. And with great pain. I don't know where they get this comparison with Tylenol, but there's tremendous pain and cramping and bleeding going on, and that could also be one of the complications, you know, loss of too much blood. This is a serious thing. And when the mother is realizing that and is going through the pain, it's too late to turn it around. Now, the good news is that if she takes that original, the first drug, the mifepristone, and prior to the second one, there is a way to turn it around, and this is the abortion pill reversal. I was actually involved at the very beginning with the doctor who discovered this method. But if the first drug is blocking progesterone, what can be done if the mom takes that pill and then later that night says, "Gee, what did I do? You know, can I still save my baby?" She can get a progesterone treatment. So if the drug is blocking progesterone, you flood her system with more progesterone, and that can end up saving the baby. And we have hundreds and, in fact, thousands of lives that have been saved now as a result of that, and more doctors are getting trained in this abortion pill reversal.
Okay, so go back on the details of what happened in the court. The Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, which is a group of doctors who are pro-life, but they've seen what this does to women, so they took this to court and challenged the court 9-0. All the justices said they don't have standing, so they didn't rule on the merits, in other words, whether mifepristone should really, FDA should be really able to make this available the way it is right now.
That's right.
But they just said
That's
no
right.
standing. Did that shock you, even that, though? Didn't you think they should have standing?
Well, you know, we knew that standing was going to be a problem. We were talking, in fact, when I was discussing the case with Erin Hawley, who, as our listeners might know, she's married to Senator Josh Hawley. But she was the one, she works with Alliance Defending Freedom, and she was the one who argued the case before the Supreme Court. So after the arguments, but before the decision, I met with her, and it was clear that standing was going to be a potential problem. Now, actually, so first of all, for people to understand about standing, you know, the courts don't exist to simply solve social problems. They certainly don't exist to set public policy. We've got the legislatures for that, and they don't exist just to resolve, you know, very legitimate complaints we might have about what the government is doing or about what public policy should be. So, in other words, the courts, if they're true to their founding purpose, should say to us, if we just say, "Hey, I think this policy is bad or it should be changed," the courts are going to say to us, "Go to the Congress, go to your state legislature, go to the lawmakers. There's a process there to change public policy." And I remember being with Justice Scalia one time. We brought a group to meet with him at the Supreme Court, and he's standing addressing the group, and somebody said, "You know, when's the court going to do something about, you know, this or that problem?" And he points out the window, which was in the direction of the Congress, and he said, "Well," he says, "you know, to solve those problems, you got to go to that building over there." And so, you know, courts exist for cases and controversies. So if I'm injured because of a law or because of something that somebody did to me, a person or a corporation, I've got a dispute with that person. You harmed my rights. You caused me, or you're about to cause me, an injury. That's what brings us to court. That's what creates a court case. And the justices simply said in this case, you know, okay, we understand as pro-life doctors you have an objection to this. Good, fair enough. You know, we respect that. How has it injured you? And that's where, you know, these doctors were not you know, prescribing the mifepristone. The FDA wasn't forcing them to do anything, and that's why the justices said you don't have standing. Now, what we have to learn from this is two things. First of all, we should not let the other side say, oh, we have a victory here. Look, you know, the FDA was right. This is okay. The court didn't say it's okay. The court didn't say the FDA was right, either in approving it or in taking away all those safety regulations. The court didn't even consider those questions. The Supreme Court, at least lower courts, did consider those questions and ruled more in favor of the pro-life side. But the Supreme Court said, well, you know, somebody else has to bring this case. So the case isn't over in that sense. They didn't rule with the FDA. They didn't rule with the other side. But the other thing, Sandy, that many people are not talking about is this. Well, Justice Thomas brought this up in his opinion. He said, look, the abortionists go to court all the time. And they try to speak on behalf of the women going to get abortions. And they go to court to say they have a right to get abortions. And it's like normally third party standing, which is what this is called. You're going to the court because somebody else has been injured, not because you've been injured, but somebody else's rights have been injured. That's third party standing. The abortionists use that all the time and they get away with it, even though they shouldn't. In other words, abortion is treated in a special category. It's like, you know, with so many other things, it's like, why are we doing that? We should not let the abortionists have third-party standing. So the ruling in this case actually helps us to argue that point going forward. Anytime an abortionist wants to complain to the court, oh, women aren't getting enough access to abortion, it's like, if they think they're being injured, let them come and bring the case. Who are you? You know, and right. I think that's a silver lining in this case.
Let's change the subject just a tiny bit and to the political, because as you know, this is really upsetting me too, Father Frank, is that the left is really using abortion all over the country to win races, to confuse people, and our people in general, certainly our politicians, are muted on this. And I want to give people an idea of just where the left is coming from, especially on the issue of President Trump on this. This is another MSNBC clip. It's number 7.
I think Donald Trump has been pretty clear over and over again that he is very proud of overturning Roe. He brags about it. He makes it, whenever he's in front of an anti-abortion crowd, he's really unequivocal about how proud he is to overturn Roe, and that he thinks actually patients and providers should be punished. He's also really intertwined with the folks behind Project 2025. His advisors are talking about using the Comstock Act, an 1800s law, to circumvent Congress and push a national federal abortion ban. And he's also talked about restricting access to contraception. So I don't think this is going to change much about where Donald Trump stands. I do think that there are going to be Republican efforts to hide their positions on this, but it's pretty hard to do so when you're on the record bragging about the fundamental case that's led to this catastrophe in this country. And that was Dobbs.
Okay, so Father Frank, let me just say that you are on you are currently on former President Trump's National Faith Advisory Board. I have a feeling you might know where he stands on this. Now they say, he's proud of his decision on his impact on Roe versus Wade. Well, is he proud of it?
Oh, absolutely. But the reason he's proud of it is that it put the issue back in the hands of the people. You see, these people are misrepresenting Dobbs and President Trump. Dobbs did not make abortion illegal. They're making it sound like it did. Oh, Dobbs banned abortion. It did not. It let the people decide instead of the courts deciding. And the point of the fact is, again, if they want to make abortion more accessible, well, we just heard from that other clip, oh, look, you know, all these abortions are, we have even more access now. In a sense, Sandy, that the Supreme Court case that just got decided undercuts their argument against President Trump, because it's like, they're saying, oh, you see, you know, abortion is going to be banned. But it's accessible all over the place. They were just bragging. See, they're just talking out of two sides of their mouth. On the one hand, they're bragging, look, we have better access to abortion. This is great. And on the other hand, they're saying, oh, but you know, this is terrible what President Trump did with Dobbs. What do you mean? We're under Dobbs now. How did the court now just? This was the first abortion decision after Dobbs by the Supreme Court. And what did they do? They allowed the access to stand. So it's like, if Dobbs was so terrible, why didn't they say, you know, we just ruled in Dobbs very, very plain and clear, therefore we have to stop access to the chemical abortion? No, because they put it in the hands of the people to work out. So then furthermore, the other thing she said in that clip just now, nothing to do with what President Trump is trying to say about abortion. He's pointing out the extremism of the Democrats, not about Comstock laws and contraception and all this other stuff. It's about, are we going to have in America late-term abortions? Are we going to continue with this effort to remove any reasonable restrictions, even parental involvement, informed consent? You know, your 15-year-old daughter wants to get an abortion. Don't you think as parents you should know something about it? The Democrat position, they don't respect that. They don't want that. They're trying to strike that down. Most states have the requirement for the parents to be involved, but the Democrats don't want that. So it's like they're getting it all wrong and doing so deliberately. President Trump wants a reasonable procedure going on here to deal with the abortion issue. Nobody says they have a magic bullet or that they have the solution, but he's saying, look, the court put it in the hands of the people. I respect where the people are at. If a state wants more abortion, they're going to do it. If they want less abortion, they're going to do it. It's a legislative process, and we shouldn't interfere with that. That's what he's coming across now. But he's also saying, look at the Democrats' extremism. They're the ones you got to be afraid of, because they don't want any limit on abortion whatsoever.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely true. This is my last question, but it's a big one. And if you can give us an overview, otherwise we'll be talking about all 50 states, and it will take us like 5 hours to talk. But what's, in general, what's happening in the states in regard to the aftermath of the overturning of Roe versus Wade? Where are the battles right now?
In a nutshell, it's half and half. We've got about 14 states that are protecting babies throughout pregnancy. We've got another dozen or so that have increased protections, like here in Florida. We now protect the babies starting at 6 weeks. And then you've got another whole bunch of states that basically allow it right up until either viability or birth. Now, the big battleground right now is in the following states. You've got in Florida and Maryland, in New York, in Arkansas, in Arizona, in Montana, in Missouri, in Nebraska, Nevada, and South Dakota. You've got battles whereby the pro-abortion side, Sandy, is trying to put a right to unrestricted abortion in the state constitution. See, they're afraid of the legislative process, because the legislative process involves a lot of debate back and forth and witnesses and evidence and lobbying, and it's more, much more public, much more extensive. A ballot to amend the Constitution, in some states it's kind of easy to do that. You just need half the voters to agree, and it's a one-day thing. You know, then maybe they heard a little soundbite or a headline, and that's about all they know about it. Or maybe they're reading it for the first time when they're in the voting booth. And what this would do, it would prevent the people and their elected officials from protecting these babies going forward, as long as that amendment is in the Constitution. I think it's a sign of the cowardice of the other side, not of their strength. But in those states, and people can go, I put up a special website called State Ballot Measures. So stateballotmeasures.org. People can get the latest on what's going on in those states where I mentioned it. We have to fight hard because, again, what this is the terrible extremism of the other side trying to assert itself and trying to short-circuit the process of legitimate public debate, just like Roe v. Wade did for 50 years.
Right, and they've been very successful, like in Ohio and Michigan, and I think California. I will do another show on this. I'm telling my listeners, I will do another show on this where we can have some warning about what's happening in some of these states. But Father Frank, that's stateballotmeasures.org. Meanwhile, they could check it out, stateballotmeasures.org. Also, go to abortiontestimonies.com to hear the testimonies. They talk about the effect of the French abortion pill, mifepristone, if you want to say it that way. And also Priests for Life. It's priestsforlife.org, priestsforlife.org. Father Frank Pavone, any final thoughts before I say goodbye to you?
Well, just to thank you for your solid witness to pro-life. I know your audience knows it already, but all of us in the pro-life movement are grateful to you, and it's great to have you as a colleague, an ally, and a friend, and we look forward to talking to you very soon once again.
Thank you, Father Frank. Very sweet. Thank you. See you soon. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, you know, abortion telehealth has become increasingly available, and that's where it partners with the French abortion pill, Mifepristone, and makes abortion available for so many women and girls. And they say there's a limit of 10 weeks, but there's no way to check that out. Women, girls don't even have to go to a doctor to get this pill. So between telehealth and the pill, abortion is becoming even more accessible, which is a nightmare for babies and, trust me, a nightmare for women. And that's where preborn comes in, because preborn appeals directly to the women. It's not a matter of, you know, whether pills are legal or not, whether abortion is legal or not at a clinic. It's no debates about that. It's just, all right, so let's just look at this, what's inside of you. Let's have a look and then see what you think. And moms, when they see their babies in their wombs, they usually can see, you know, sometimes facial features, often the gender of the baby. They just decide, I can't do this. I want that baby, or I want someone to have it. I want it to live. And so that's why preborn is so powerful and so effective. If you would like to help them by supplying these ultrasounds, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
These doctors didn't have a stake in the outcome sufficient to allow them to even sue. But it does leave open the possibility that, hypothetically, some other set of plaintiffs could actually be harmed by FDA in this way that would allow them to sue. But one of the things the court noted in the opinion was that it may be the case, and sometimes it is the case, that nobody has standing, that the remedy is to go through the political process and vote or go through the regulatory process.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you, and I've brought my sweetheart, the former FBI agent, to talk about some of the things we talked about with Father Frank. Bruce, can you expand on the whole business of standing again? I understand it kind of, but can you help us understand that?
Well, standing just means that you basically have skin in the game, that you have been wronged by something, and therefore the remedy to that wrong may be available through the courts. And I have to tell you, I really disagree with the courts saying that there is not standing in this case. I understand it when they say, well, these particular doctors may not have standing. But the problem becomes the person who would have standing is dead. It's a baby that's been aborted. They have probably the best standing. And, you know, the 14th Amendment guarantees protection under the equal protection right to people to have life and liberty. We have defined life as beginning at conception. Not in all states, but many of us feel that way, that life begins at conception. And therefore, the moment a baby is conceived, it should have the protections of the 14th Amendment. the 14th Amendment, if you have that protection, that means you're a person, and that means you have you should have access to the judicial system to air your grievances. And who is being deprived more of life and liberty than an aborted fetus, an aborted child?
Yeah. You know, Bruce, I have my suspicions about this decision. It was Kavanaugh who wrote the opinion, and basically, I thought I had it in front of me, but basically said that they didn't have standing and it belongs properly, you know, in the legislature, or they should be deciding this. I think these guys are, they are under such attack. They are under such attack. Look what Alito, Justice Alito and his wife are still going through. And so are Clarence Thomas and his wife. And the conservative, and Kavanaugh during his hearing, and it was all about abortion. They have managed, I think, to frighten them. Because they have really turned up, the left has really turned up the burner and made their lives miserable. They're succeeding, I can tell you that. They're having some effect. And I think this decision kind of reflects that they are afraid to take another stand on this issue.
Well, and you know, this court has shown a history of, I think, dodging tough decisions by relying upon the person not having standing. You know, there's been a lot of cases decided by the Supreme Court in the past, by other Supreme Courts, where I would say the standing of the person who brought the case might have been very questionable, but it's such an important issue that the court needed to weigh in on it. Because, like in this case, there will be a plaintiff. I don't know whether that's going to be the father of a baby that was aborted without his consent, whether someone will rule it is the baby itself. There will be a plaintiff. So really, we went through all the machinations of the court hearing this case, and then they say, well, there's no standing for the person. To me, that, you know, that's just a dodge. And I have not been able to read all the opinions, and I don't know if anyone discussed the potential standing of someone to bring this suit. But if they didn't, I think they should have and laid the groundwork for who would be acceptable as a plaintiff.
Well, Justice Thomas commented this way. He said, in a separate opinion, he said he agreed with the rest of his colleagues that the doctors lacked standing. Mm-hmm. But, he said, he wants to flag an even broader issue, which as I'm saying, the Supreme Court is allowing associations to sue on behalf of members. He said, under the current practice, the court allows lawsuits by associations when an individual member would have been able to sue. But that distorts the usual expectations for a plaintiff's ability to sue. He said, associational standing raises constitutional concerns by relaxing both the injury and the redressability requirements for Article III standing. It also upsets other legal doctrines. So that was his position on it.
Well, what bothers me, too, about this 14th Amendment argument, equal protection, the ability of a person who was aborted to access to the court as a person.
To claim the 14th Amendment.
The 14th Amendment has been stretched in many ways. It originally was enacted in the 1860s to protect black people who had been freed from slavery. And what has happened in the years since then is that those protections have been expanded to many people. And now it's been expanded to even cover sexual orientation. Now think about that. We can protect, the government says we should protect somebody because they say they're gay, but we won't protect someone who was alive and was killed in an abortion. Now to me, that makes no sense.
None whatsoever, yeah.
And I think that the an association or a parent who was involved with this baby, in the creation of this baby, should be given standing. Basically, an association can stand in, I believe it would be in loco parentis or whatever you want to call, in the stead of, because this person is no longer here.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, honey. That makes sense. Well, we'll see what happens. I know the pro-life groups, the ones that have the ability, the Americans United for Life and others, they'll be coming at this again in some way. I'm sure they will. The person that argued in court was Josh Hawley's wife. Who's just a just an incredible attorney. She's the one that argued it before the court, representing the Alliance Defending Freedom. So it's Mike Ferris's organization, Bruce. So anyway, they'll do great work or they won't stop with this. Now, I have one other issue to raise with you because you are an attorney. I want you to listen to this. This is an attorney on MSNBC, and this is what she said. Clip four.
So in the short term, you're right. This decision overrules the lower court's orders that had ordered additional restrictions on mifepristone or had ordered the FDA to remove the medication abortion drug from the market entirely. And so in that sense, it preserves the status quo for medication abortion, ensuring that doctors and patients can access the drug because they concluded that the plaintiffs who brought this case, a group of anti-abortion doctors, did not establish that they were sufficiently likely to be injured because of the availability of medication abortion, which, of course, is an extremely safe drug. However, it's important to note that what the court's opinion did not do is they did not rule out the possibility of what's known as a Comstock Act challenge in the future. The Comstock Act is an 1873 Victorian-era law that some Republicans, including lower court judges, have suggested actually amounts to a nationwide ban on not just medication abortion, but the abortion procedure as well. And so it's possible that in a future Republican administration, you could see a Republican president and attorney general invoke the Comstock Act to argue that medication abortion cannot be distributed. This case does not rule out that possibility. It merely concludes that the anti-abortion doctors who brought this case were not actually injured and therefore could not take the medication abortion drug off the market themselves.
So there you go. Oh, I have to just jump in. That is not an extremely safe drug. It's not like Tylenol. What a lie, but I've talked about that with Brother Frank, and I want to make sure I say it again for those of you that might have missed that. Okay, honey, the Comstock Act. So she's stating that President Trump wants to enact a national ruling that would outlaw all abortions all the time based on this Comstock Act. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that from anyone. I haven't heard that from anyone. What's this all about? Do you know?
You know, the Comstock Act, as about the only thing that the reporter stated correctly was that it's from 1873. And this law was to ban the mailing and receiving of what is called obscene material. Now, the left has stretched this to say, oh, well, you know, the way the right thinks, they think that anything involving abortion is obscene, and that they will bootstrap this law into preventing the mailing of these abortion drugs. I think that's really stretching it. It's like when we hear people throw around the Logan Act.
Yes.
I guess in theory it might be able to be used, but it's not going to be in reality. The way this needs to be addressed is through the Supreme Court, and it was right there to be addressed, and they dodged it. And I just think this does nothing but rile people up on both sides, because it doesn't prevent the mailing of the drug right now. So the people that aren't for that are going to double down to protect that, quote unquote. And the people that are against the availability of these drugs without a doctor's prescription, you know, a doctor visit, a doctor follow-up, anyone being involved in the procedure that is medical, and no ability to determine whether this pill is even being used correctly.
No reporting allowed.
Yeah, if it's actually being used within the time perimeters that are allowed, or it violates the law in the particular state as to when they will allow abortion to take place. It just sets them in even a more of a limbo position, because what is going to be acceptable to be a person that has standing in this case? And that could have been laid out at least. But I think the court should have at least had the guts, I would say, to lay out, you know, if we have a such and such a person of such and such standing, then we would probably consider a case from them. But they really just left it up in the air. And so really, this was an exercise in futility, and it made things worse, I think.
It's not good. It's discouraging. And I don't care what the reasons are. We have a lot of pro-life judges on that court. And I just think that you'd have to have a really good reason to not hear this case. And
But I agree with you, Sandy. While we don't know for sure, we can certainly speculate. And we have seen the intimidation factor coming into play. You know, I think you see it in these court cases. Like Donald Trump, we hear that there was a juror that did not want to vote for guilty, but he or she was ganged up on because the other jurors are like, we don't want to be a part of a jury that doesn't find Donald Trump guilty, and then our names are going to be out there. We're going to be intimidated. We're going to be hounded. I just think this has far-reaching effects.
Yes, intimidation is working. Yeah, I think so. With that, but it's not over because there will be more challenges, I'm sure of it. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7. Honey, thank you.
Thank you for
your expertise. I appreciate that so much. And I want to remind you that we're in the business of trying to save lives. And if you want to help us do that, bypasses all of this, I'd say, nonsense. We have to fight in the courts. We have to fight in the legislature. But we often lose. And so because that's the case, even more the reason to help Preborn. So go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Also, you can call us if you have a different opinion. Call us at 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. You can listen at sandyrios.com. And I also want to thank our new sponsor, especially Timothy Plan. You know, you can put your money where your values are and discover how to be biblically responsible as an investor. Just visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.